at macfound.org.
And support for WMNF comes from our members in UF Online, providing education to qualified students. As a top 10 public university, online students earn the same degree as their on-campus counterparts. Students can apply by May 6th for fall. UF students don't just log in, they connect. And if you have a car that you no longer need, and you're thinking, think about using it to support WMNF. Donating a car, truck, or other vehicle is a great way to support causes you care about, like your station. Visit WMNF.org or call 888-966-3885. All right. Good afternoon. You are listening to WMNF. This is 88.5 FM and WMNF.org, and you are listening to Executive Session. Today, as we do on Wednesdays, we present Everyday Ethics as our feature, Everyday Ethics, and I am introduced you to the host of that feature, Mr. Adam Baxt.
Hey, welcome to Executive Session, a radio show about our executive branch in these United States, and a show I'm happy to say is celebrating its second anniversary today. Through this show, we are testing a certain proposition that our republic will fare better if instead of yelling at each other across the street, we talk to each other above the back fence. The we I'm referring to is, of course, all of you and all of us in the studio. Today, I'm joined here in the session by your regular host and master of ceremony and birthday boy, Mr. John Gilmore. Happy birthday, John.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
As well as the man behind the phone, Mr. Jeff Haynes, who will be taking your calls and maybe asking for a word or two before you're on the air. You can get in contact with us by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or through text at 813-433-0885. All three ways are your tickets into the session, so let's talk. We start this Wednesday edition in our normal fashion with a conversation from the team of Everyday Ethics. And this week, we revisit a classic episode in light of a tweet that President Trump sent out yesterday morning reading, quote, "The reason Sarah Sanders does not go to the podium much anymore is that the press covers her so rudely and inaccurately. In particular, certain members of the press, I told her not to bother. The word gets out anyway. Most will never cover us fairly, and hence the term fake news." Today, we return to an Everyday Ethics episode on presidential press conferences.
To argue or not to argue? That is the question, journalists. This is Everyday Ethics.
Everyday Ethics is a production of WMNF Tampa in conjunction with the Poynter Institute. Poynter, a global leader in journalism. Additional support is provided by NYU Langone Medical Center, one of the nation's premier academic medical centers devoted to patient care, education, and research.
Hi there, this is Everyday Ethics, where we talk about things that happen around you every day from an ethical point of view, give you some ideas and see if you can make some ethical decisions about these issues yourself. I'm Craig Kopp. I'm in the studios of WMNF Radio Tampa, joined as always by media ethicist Kelly McBride at the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hello, Kelly.
Currently dealing with an internet blow-up.
For which we're going to discuss in moments. Also joined by Art Kaplan. He's a medical ethicist at NYU's Langone Medical Center in New York City. Hello, Art.
Hey, how are you? Trying to blow up Kelly on the internet.
Yep. What we're talking about here is Kelly works at the Poynter Institute for Media Studies and co-wrote a column about that dust-up between Jim Acosta and the President of the United States in a news conference that happened the day after the midterm elections.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to challenge you on one of the statements that you made in the tail end of the campaign in the midterms.
Here we go.
That this caravan was an invasion. As you know, Mr. President,
I consider it to be an invasion.
As you know, Mr. President, the caravan was not an invasion. It's a group of migrants moving up from Central America towards the border with the U.S.
Thank you for telling me.
And why did you characterize it as such?
I consider it an invasion. You and I have a difference of opinion.
But do you think that you demonized immigrants in this election.
I want them to come into the country, but they have to come in legally. You know, they have to come in, Jim, through a process. I want it to be a process, and I want people to come in, and we need the people.
Your campaign.
You know why we need the people, don't you? Because we have hundreds of companies moving in. We need the people.
Right. But your campaign had an ad showing migrants climbing over walls and
They weren't actors.
They're not going to be doing
they
that.
They weren't actors. Well, no, it's true. Do you think they were actors? They weren't actors. They didn't come from Hollywood. Right. These were people. This was an actual, you know, it happened a few days ago. And
they're hundreds of miles away, though. They're hundreds and hundreds of miles away. That's not an invasion.
I think you should let me run the country. You run CNN.
All right.
And if you did it well, your ratings would be much better.
If I may ask one other question, Mr. President, are you worried?
Mr. President, I had one other question, if I may ask, on the Russia investigation.
Are you concerned that... That you may have
I'm not concerned about anything with the Russian investigation because it's a hoax. That's enough. Put down the mic.
Mr. President, are you worried about indictments coming down in this investigation? Mr. President.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN. Go ahead.
I think that's unfair.
You're a very rude person. The way you treat Sarah Huckabee is horrible. And the way you treat other people are horrible. You shouldn't treat people that way. Go ahead.
In Jim's defense, I've traveled with him and watched him. He's a diligent reporter who busts his butt.
Well, I'm not a big fan of yours either, so
I understand.
To be honest.
So let me ask you a question if I can. You aren't the best. Mr. President, you repeatedly, over the course
of... Okay, just sit down, please. Well, when you report fake news, which CNN does a lot, you are the enemy of the people.
Okay, Kelly, what did you write that stirred up the entire media world about this exchange between Jim Acosta and the president?
So I got to say, the first thing is that the way that we are actually arguing about this article, the way that we here in this podcast are arguing about it, the way that people on Facebook are arguing about it, the way that people on Twitter are arguing about it, and the way that my inbox looks right now is reflective of the overall problem. And that is that we cannot use neutral language to have a conversation. And that is what Al Tompkins, my dear colleague, and I critiqued Jim Acosta of CNN of doing. Jim Acosta was not interested in Trump's answers. He was interested in having an argument with him. And that's fine, except Jim Acosta's journalistic purpose in going to a White House press conference is to ask questions of the president that the president will then answer, and then Jim Acosta is supposed to give information to his audience in proper context, which means if the president says something that's untrue, his job is to ask the president why he thinks that's true, to point out that there are many people who believe that it's untrue or that it actually is untrue, and then to report that information to his audience. But Jim Acosta just got into an argument with the president, and he wasn't listening to what the president was going to say. And yes, I know this president distorts just about every issue, and I know that he is prone to making things up. And at issue in this particular case, as we just heard on the tape, is the use of the word invasion to describe the caravan of Central Americans who are walking toward the U.S. border to try and gain entry. It's a fair question to ask, but you gotta ask it in a question. And Jim Acosta kept saying, it's not an invasion. When in fact, what he should have done and what we wrote in our article was, Mr. President, what about that group of people causes you to characterize it as an invasion?
How do you know, by the way, that Jim Acosta was not interested by his behavior?
Yeah, by the fact that when President Trump started to say something, Jim Acosta cut him off.
You just said the president is very prone to distort just about everything, to make things up out of whole cloth. There's a new reality here, but there cannot be a new reality for reporters who cover that. You have to let the president make things up and then later on say he made things up.
I actually think that this reality in the White House press corps has existed for a long time. It has always been an active theater. Reporters get up and they attempt to demonstrate how smart they are. They ask really long-winded questions. It's never been a great forum for getting information out of the White House or the president himself. We actually have written about this for years under many, many administrations, saying, hey, White House reporters, a best practice of journalism is to ask neutral, open-ended questions.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I've always hated press conferences, period. In fact, when I ran newsrooms, many times if we couldn't get a one-on-one afterwards to ask our own damn questions, we didn't run anything from them.
Which is a great option, right? That is a really great option.
You're not going to get that at the White House.
Well, so the problem is that we're quickly spiraling into a place in this democracy where nobody has a universal set of facts. And the media, the press, we are the ones that are supposed to present the audience with information that we have verified. But if the audience doesn't trust us, and what Jim Acosta did was open up a door for Trump to walk through and say, see, he's biased. See how biased he is? He won't even let me answer his question. We're in a really dangerous place if we cannot come up with a set of facts that we agree are facts in this country. Democracy will not work.
Art, you're a reporter or you're a researcher and you go to somebody for information and they burn you every day. They do not tell you the truth. Do you continue to go to that person for information when you know it will be false?
I do, because I don't think that the press conference is just an information exchange. It's not a science report. It's not a factual description. You're watching the president and the administration behave, and you get ideas about whether you support them or trust them from their tone and their combativeness and their what they duck and what they don't say. And it's theater, but it has a use. Just as a consumer of these things, I don't go to White House press conferences, but I quickly get an attitude. And one attitude I've got is out of this Acosta exchange, the administration seemed to have an intern out there, which I've never seen before, who they may have been using to bait Acosta. I don't know, but that's interesting if they do that. And what I do know is they then posted a phony, lying, ridiculous tape when a real tape existed, trying to accuse Acosta of
assaulting. Yeah, the intern.
Or manhandling this intern. That is pretty clear evidence of lying. Now, whether you want to believe that any of Trump's most ardent supporters care, which I doubt, since they follow him, not the facts. But there are people in the middle who would say the mere fact that this tape got put out there in the aftermath of all this, putting aside how Acosta should have behaved, the president behaved in a completely immoral, maybe even illegal manner, doctoring a tape. So that's news. That's interesting. That's important. It's not about the content of the back and forth about immigration, but it's, I don't know, that's something I learned from.
Kelly, let's say Acosta acted unprofessionally, as you argue, and, you know, make very good points, I guess. I still am frustrated by the idea. And the president acted immorally in releasing this tape. The bottom line of the releasing of that tape was a justification to yank the hard pass of Jim Acosta and thus control his access to the White House. Was that an ethical move?
No, absolutely not. And if you are game for assuming what the president's motives are, I mean, he really doesn't care whether Jim Acosta is in the press conferences. What he cares about is we just came off a midterm election where his party lost some power. A little bit of power, not a ton of power. But what he cares about is spinning the narrative. And if he can further the narrative that the press is against him, he will do a couple of things. He will suppress votes, right? People who would be inclined to come out 2 years from now and vote against him, they're just as likely to stay home, right? They're going to conclude that there's no way for them to come up with the truth because the press is so biased. He can also distract from some very important issues that are going on, right? He signed an executive order that allows him to deny asylum to all immigrants coming across the border, all of them.
Coming across illegally.
Yes. But the definition of illegal is if you show up at the border and you don't have a visa.
I think you got to go through the process point and do all the applications and all that.
Jeff Sessions, on his way out the door, enacted a policy that prevents the Justice Department from intervening with police departments that have been demonstrated to be abusing their power. Right, there is a lot going on that the public needs to pay attention to, and this is a meaningless distraction that the president is currently winning right now.
So, in this press conference situation with Jim Acosta, the ethical move of the White House press corps is to ask a question, and when the answer comes back clearly a lie, to allow that to stand at the time and point it out later?
No, I think that you can point it out right there, but you have to do it in neutral terms. You have to pick your battles. If it's the word invasion, ask him why do you think it's an invasion? And when he describes it in ridiculous terms, he's probably going to then move on and call somebody else. And the press corps needs to work together in this case to say, I'd like to follow up on that and ask, would you consider a group of Canadians walking toward the border an invasion? To press him on his thinking, but to do it in a neutral way.
Hey, I have a question. If Acosta...
Sit down. You've had your chance. No, I'm sorry.
If Acosta's... You know, he's been battling Trump and sort of making his chops as a journalist, as an opponent, a critic, someone who's feisty. It reminds me of sort of Sam Donaldson from an earlier time on steroids. You know, I persist, I'm tough, I ask hard questions, that's what I do. CNN is kind of positioned as not fond of Trump, and I'm the point man. Do they have to call on him at all? What's this thing about withdrawing his press pass? Why don't they just ignore him if they don't want to get into it with him?
I have no idea, right? Yes, no, they don't have to call on him. That's why it seems like it might have possibly been a setup, because the president did actually call on him.
Yeah, so part of what the media needs to do is explain what are the rules of these press conferences. If he wanted to call on the weekly reader of elementary school reporters, he could ignore the networks, he could ignore Associated Press. He's not stuck having to recognize anybody in particular. The fact that he does suggest that he's ready to sort of use Acosta, if he can get away with it, to get where he wants to go. But we don't understand, we, meaning me, the consuming public, what's going on there. It's an insider game with everybody having an agenda that I don't know if Poynter should be explaining it, or every once in a while a news outlet should say, here's what the press conferences are all about, and here's the rules, and
you know,
the media could work together. I mean, why are they at work today? Why would anybody go and cover him today if they put out a phony tape yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We could be a lot more transparent in the media. Art, you were asking, or Craig, you were asking, actually, who's more wrong, right? Acosta was unprofessional. The president was immoral. Who's more wrong? Mm-hmm. That's a fair question. But it's also important to remember that this is an ethics conversation. Everybody in this, including me and the Poynter Institute, has a duty. And you have to understand what your duty is. The backlash that we got, and it wasn't all backlash, right? We got a lot of support, too. I think it was about 2-1 against us, mm-hmm. right? But if you look at my inbox, it's exactly the opposite, because that's more of an intimate form of communication. What's the president's duty? We're never going to figure that out, right? Because you got to get inside his head. And it certainly is different than any other president.
That must be an interesting place to visit.
Exactly. Mm. What's Acosta's duty? What is the duty of the White House press corps? What's the duty of the Poynter Institute, right? The duty of the Poynter Institute is to help journalism be as strong as it can possibly be, so that democracy works. Acosta, it's not really clear what he sees his duty as. And I think that that goes to the transparency of it. When he was talking, I can't remember if it was Jake Tapper, Anderson Cooper, I wish the anchor would have asked him, hey, when you go into a press conference, what's your mission, right? Yeah.
One other question here from me. It's clear that the yanking of his hard pass and his access to the White House, that's an intimidation tactic. Everybody else in the White House correspondence group be forewarned that we will do what we want to. And if you want access, which is how you make your living, be aware that you're putting your press pass at risk. So, what should be the White House Correspondents Association response to this, especially since the person they go to for White House briefings, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, is the person who released this doctored video?
They should protest in every possible way. But the other thing is,
should they do it at press briefings?
Maybe they should just not show up for the press
briefings. I wouldn't show up. I think they shouldn't show up until they admit they released a doctored tape.
Yeah, until there's some sort of remedy for it.
And by the way, they won't because, let's be square, yes, they have a mission, but it's also a business, and people are striving to get floor time. And if Acosta isn't there and they could get a question, or their boss says, I don't care about what the president did, you just get back there, we got to put news on the air. I mean, isn't that part of what they're going to do?
Right. The bosses have a duty here, too. You have a duty, if you employ a journalist in the White House press corps, to tell that journalist that if you lose your press pass, you're still going to have a job. We're still going to figure out a way to cover the White House. And when you go into the press room, here's what I think your job is. There needs to be some sort of agreement there.
We have, by the way, survived without anybody in the press at the White House. I can't remember which president, but there's been a couple that just said, I don't want any reporters in here anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
It hasn't been in recent history.
Oh, no. 40s, 30s.
We could easily cover the White House from the outside.
Well, you know, you look at a Maggie Haberman at
exactly.
the time. She never in there.
Yeah, that's a great example. You get better information, and it's harder work, but you serve democracy better by covering it from the outside anyway.
You just need to know how to use an encryption system on your texts. So people have a special number they can call.
Yeah, you need to know how to do real reporting.
Exactly. Which those news conferences
are not.
That was your original argument. On that note, I call this news conference to a close. For Kelly McBride and Art Kaplan, I'm Craig Kopp, and this is Everyday Ethics, knowing the difference between what you have a right to do and what's right to do. Everyday Ethics is engineered, produced, and edited by Dustin Hapley,
who currently has a job on this podcast, but if he flames me one more time on my Facebook page,
your hard pass will be revoked, sir.
Exactly.
And our researcher is
Christina Sokolov.
There you have it. An Everyday Ethics episode on the ethics of presidential press conferences. So, what do you think? Do you expect the White House to provide regular briefings for the American press? Should reporters dispute allegations they know are false? How would you go about being a White House correspondent? Have you noticed the lack of briefings in the past weeks, or do you avoid these pulpits altogether? Either way, we want to hear from you. Call us up at 813-239-9663, and that will get you in contact with Mr. Jeff Haynes, who will chat with you a little bit and then send you, through the magic of audio, into our session with me and Mr. Gilmore. That's 813-239-9663, and we'll be back to chat with you after these very important announcements.
It's finally happening. WMNF presents J.D. McPherson at Skipper Smokehouse on Friday, February 22nd. Heatland's 50s and 60s roots revival with a rocking alternative sound. Lindsay Beaver opens the show at 8 p.m. Tickets and more information at WMNF.org.
Support for WMNF comes from our members and Happy Feet Plus, a locally owned full-service footwear store featuring Birkenstock, Kenco massage sandals, and many other name brands. Happy Feet Plus offers footwear fashioned to provide relief to people with foot, leg, knee, and back pain. Styles and selections at happyfeet.com. Adam?
Well, I say we get to the phone lines. Today we're talking about presidential press conferences and the ethics of them and the importance or lack thereof such events. We're going to go and talk to Bill in Homosassa. Bill, happy Wednesday.
Hey.
Hey.
I was about one sleep waiting on you guys. Hey, now, what part of this White House can you actually say has any ethics?
Right.
Any. I mean, I sat here and thought about that. You tell me what ethical anything Trump has done. Name me one.
It's a challenge.
Yeah, it's hard.
What do you have done?
I don't think I can't think of anyone.
Let's see, ethical. I don't know. My of course, now the only ethics that I have to judge by are mine, and there are very few things that I can think of that he's done that I would have done. So I don't know.
Exactly. But what kills me with the whole thing, I'm gonna leave you alone, is there is a percentage of this United States. Just like those boys with the red hats and taunting that old man, that's normal, I guess. I never really, do you think that that's the normal for that percentage of the United States to not care about people living in cars and hungry kids and health care and jobs and?
I think those attitudes have been present for a long time, Bill, and I think that the current political atmosphere has kind of given space for the for their expression.
Yeah,
that's kind of what it looks like to me.
And these United States, these citizens, have let their guard down as far as letting the unions demolish themselves to where there is no rights for nobody anymore. I mean, I'm retired, buddy. I'm locked. What I got, I'm gonna have, and you know, unless they come get it, but I'm pretty good shape. But it's just so sad. It truly, truly is. I mean, it just, I don't get it.
What we're asking the president and these questions we're asking him are less important than just the bare minimum of what are the responsibilities for him to take on in sense of what he should be giving back to the American people?
I think the American people or sheep. Hmm. Why I say that, I think this weekend his wife caught on a United States Air Force jet and they flew her to Mar-a-Lago or whatever that's called down there.
Mm-hmm.
To the expense of, who knows, with Secret Service, transport. I mean, that meter's running wide open every time those people make a move of any kind. And I just don't understand. I truly don't. I mean, it upsets me terribly. You know, that the people that they're in the shape that they're in, and this country is allowing this to happen. They made a bigger deal over that kid from the Catholic school, the red hat, than I heard a lady on Rob's show today that's living practically in her car.
Mm.
Husband died, engineer. I mean, I'm between a wall and the shutdown and all this. Where does this stop? What ethics, you know, the old saying, what would Jesus do?
That's a good question.
Over and out. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Thanks a lot.
I think Bill has opened up the discussion for a lot of the frustrations we are feeling right now. Yeah. We're on day, 32 of this government shutdown?
Yeah, I believe it's 32.
So that's a good way to start the conversation. We're going to go and talk to D in St. Pete. D, happy Wednesday. Welcome to Executive Session.
Happy Wednesday, dear. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, delivering my flowers throughout Pinellas County. I would like to say, as I graduated high school, hard working American, paid my taxes, went to college years later for journalism. The first thing I was taught was who, why. Nope, it was who, what, where, when.
Yep.
And when it's all possible, why? Why did this happen? What, you know, why do the American people, should we care? You know what I'm sick of is the term fake news.
I agree.
Sick and tired of fake news. Every time fake news is brought up, I know it has something to do with the man up at 1600 Pennsylvania. that's the fake, you know, I'm taking that completely off my palate. I'm done with that. What I'd like to do is see the American journals who are covering the White House. Come on, we got federal employees who can't feed their kids, can't pay daycare, can't pay their mortgages, can't make car payments, don't even have gas money to get to work, and they're still somehow carpooling and going to work without pay. We've got women throughout the country and globally watching the U.S. They're hitting the street, and it's all about equality, equality, freedom. Well, you know, I'm one who knows. I got brothers who've served this country. And they're wounded warriors today, barely survived. I got to tell you, sick and damn tired of it. I'd like the American media, who covers the White House, to stand up, unified, as a free press, and not feed in to this narcissistic man up there. Another, you know, I'm a smart woman, but I'll never, ever be able to figure out how in the heck this man is even in office after his number one opponent, Ms. Clinton, won by over 3 million votes.
Mm-hmm. 'Tis a puzzlement.
Yeah, but I'd like to see the press, I'll close it up, I'd like to see the press not show up at the White House. Don't feed this narcissistic, that's all he wants is, he wants the control. He wants a dictatorship. I don't think the man ever sat down in school when he was a child and read an American history book. I really do not. I'm sick of it. And I know I'm not the only one sick of it. And don't show up to the White House press briefing. You want to see this man turn fake tan? Oh, yeah. Ignore him. Ignore him, please. That's all.
Okay. Y'all have a good evening. Some more frustration.
All right, thank you, D. Thanks a lot for calling.
Once again, our number is 813-239-9663. We have a couple lines open if you want to call up in. But right now, we're going to go and talk to Simon in Lakeland. Simon says here you want to talk a little bit about journalism.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. A couple observations. First, we're listening to progressive radio, so I know there's a view there. But a couple points first, and then I'd like to ask you both gentlemen a question.
Yep.
Is PolitiFact stated that Donald Trump won 84.5%, 84.5% of all the counties in the country, and Hillary Clinton won 15.5%. That's one issue. And then another issue is if you look at the Shorenstein study, which is out of Harvard, 93%, 92% of the coverage on Donald Trump is negative in the first 100 days. Also, the Pew Research of 2012, if you compare the three networks, which is MSNBC, CNN, and Fox, CNN facts are about 55%, opinion 45%, Fox 45%, opinion 55%, and MSNBC 15% and 85% opinion. The other thing I'd like to bring
and whose study is this?
That's the Pew Research of 2012.
2012.
It's a little dated.
Okay, so sure seven, 8 years ago, right?
Well, they haven't updated that research.
I see.
But even if I would go back, if your archives would go back to the 2012, you would still have, anecdotally, a number of people who listen and watch MSNBC. But what's interesting to me is journalism and ethics is that if you were an alien and you came down to the planet and you watched the videos of the night of the election of Donald Trump, I think you would come away with the fact that it was very biased and disappointment on this so-called unbiased news media. In fact, if you look at a study by two professors out of California, Woolley and Peters, 57 national newspapers endorsed Hillary Clinton. Only two newspapers in the country endorsed Donald Trump. Of the 57 newspapers, they had a circulation of over 13 million people. If you include the Never Trumpers in that, you'd have to add another 3 million.
Okay. And your point is?
My point is, and I recommend to Adam, you should pick up a book by Walter Lippmann. It's almost coming on the 100th century of a book called Public Opinion. Great book. News is not necessarily the truth. News is an event, not necessarily the entire truth. And that's what we are dealing with now. We are dealing with a bias. We are dealing with...
Is it a bias if what the person you are reporting on continually misrepresents, distorts, lies, and is generally mendacious and prevaricates, and you say that? Is that a bias?
Give me an example.
Well, say that, for example, you covered Mr. Trump for a week and you pointed out all of the things that he said that simply were not true. Some, like when he, well, just for example, when he was talking to Judge Jeanine Pirro the other day and he turned around and said he hasn't left the White House in a month or months, okay? Now, that is a patently false statement, and it's obvious to anyone who's even been paying any attention because he just got back from at least two different junkets.
Okay.
So if he says that kind of stuff, if he tells the Canadian Prime Minister that we have a trade deficit with Canada and we don't, and you point that out. If he says that tens of thousands of people have been arrested at the southern border, and that's not true because what he's quoting is figures that are accumulated from all over, from all border, and you point that out, is that bias?
Well, I don't watch Fox News, so I didn't see the interview, but to get to the gist of what you're saying, there is a great deal of minutia that is analyzed. No different than...
No, but that's not what I asked, Simon. If the man lies over and over and over again, and you tell the press, and the press tells the American people that he lied over and over and over again, is that bias?
It is biased in relative to the sanitization of the previous administration. When
Ben no, no, Cohen, we're not talking about okay, the previous okay. administration, well, Simon. No, we're talking no, about listen, the press coverage news, of this president.
John, news media journalists should not change their view during a administration. Would you not agree?
I don't know what you're talking about, Simon. I asked you a specific question, and the specific question I will reiterate is: if you are covering someone who lies day after day after day, and you report day after day after day that they're lying, are you biased?
You have to. Does he lie? Yes. Yes. I'm not. Wait, John.
Go ahead. We're listening.
I'm not saying that the man does not exaggerate interpretation lie. Okay. If I said very simplistically to the audience, I had 300 people at my birthday party, and people looked and saw only 175. Is that important information? Is that a lie?
Yes, that is it. You have
literally
said
a lie.
You have said something that isn't true, and I believe that is the definition of lie.
But that's not the importance of what we should be discussing with regard to policy with this administration.
I agree. That is definitely minutia, Simon. But we are talking about an administration that misrepresents substantial policy matters. Okay, such as the statistics of the people that they represent are crossing the border illegally, the number of crimes they commit, all that stuff. The 4,000 terrorists supposedly arrested at the southern border, when the fact of the matter is there were 6 people that were on the watch list, and the other 3,994 were picked up at airports because they came from countries where we are concerned about terrorism.
Does the description of what he's saying affect the policy of building a wall on the southern border?
Yes.
I'll leave you with this.
Okay.
After World War II, there were seven countries that had borders, fences, walls. There are now 77 countries that have borders, fences, walls. Are you disagreeing with almost not quite half of the countries on the planet? There's 192 countries. 77 have borders, fences, walls. You disagree with them, right?
I am pointing out that there is a long history of people building walls for defense, and those walls failed. And you can ask the Chinese, and before the Chinese, you can go back to the Sumerians. And if you want to come in this direction from the Chinese, talk to the French.
Then why are the 70 additional countries doing that? Are they racist?
You need to, in that case, you'll have to talk to them. Simon, listen, we've been on for almost 10 minutes, and I appreciate the fact that you bring a lot of facts and that you bring a viewpoint, and I always am pleased to talk with you, and I hope that in the future we will get to talk again, sir. Thank you very much.
Adam, get the book.
Well, that was fun.
That was interesting.
We're going to go and take some more break, and when we come back, we'll be here to talk with Lynn and Clearwater. You're going to be up next, okay? All right.
Do you have closets or shelves filled with record albums that you've not listened to for years?
Just take those old records off the shelf.
We can find new homes for your old LPs. Donate them to WMNF for our annual record and CD sale coming in April. Bring your albums to the station, and for big collections in good condition, we will come for pickup. Call 813-238-8001 for more information.
All right, we are back. Adam, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. We're going to go talk to Lynn in Clearwater and why the media isn't covering Trump's taxes. Hello, Lynn. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm almost bald here from pulling my hair out.
You and me both, Lynn.
I'm dumbfounded. When it comes to the media, they must be getting paid off or something. I don't know. But why are they not covering anything that has to do with his taxes? Where are his taxes? We deserve to see his taxes. Everyone has shown their taxes in the past. Why isn't he showing his taxes? Like, they were on daily about Trump wanting to see the president's birth certificate. It's like, it drives me crazy.
Yeah. The public records in this country are very important to me, as I am sure they are important to you, Ms. Lynn. And I have to agree with you on this. I think it's an important issue that seems to constantly get pushed under the rug by the craziness that is coming from this administration hourly.
Yeah, daily, hourly. Yes, you're right. And I agree with John regarding the whole media thing and his lying, continually lying. And, like, everybody's believing his lies, but they don't believe the truth. I don't understand what's going on.
If you offer someone a ready explanation that allows them to dismiss anything unpleasant, they'll use it. And so if you offer someone a description of something called fake news, then any time that anybody says anything you don't like, you have a ready reply.
Mm-hmm.
See?
True.
Isn't that easy?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for calling, guys. Lynn. We appreciate it. And please call again.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to go and talk to Jack in Dover. Jack, how are you doing?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello. John, my question to you is, at Florida State University, if you wanted to make a comment or write an article about the school in general or something that might have happened on campus, do you have to get approval first from a higher authority at the school, or can you just, you know, write a column? And is that any, you know, and I'm saying not just you because you're a journalist, but anybody on campus?
Well, It depends on what column you're trying to make. If you're doing a opinion article, then that's your own opinion. But if you are slandering or libeling facts, then I think you have to face a higher authority in the education.
Right. Yeah. I think most of the places that I've ever worked at, they're usually in all of the paperwork that you have to sign prior to employment, the disclosure and something about press releases, there's usually something that you have to sign that, you know, you won't. And my point to all of this is I'm wondering, why doesn't the president have to sign something like that so that before he says anything, you know, it can be edited and looked at and the facts could be checked? How is it that he can just say whatever he wants about any topic? That's what I don't understand, and still be president.
That's a good point there, Jack.
So we got that. We got that little hitch in our get along that we call the First Amendment that allows you to say just about anything.
Yeah.
As long as you're not inciting violence or threatening somebody with bodily harm.
Well, John, but with regards to your place of employment, your First Amendment is it's a tighter rein with regards to places of employment. I know that they're. You know, you can't say things that are deemed harassment or, you know, sexually inappropriate, you know, and it just seems like some of the things, and, you know, I've always been in Donald Trump's corner, but it seems like some of the things that he says are just borderline wrong.
Yeah, I think you have a flair for understatement there that's well noted. Borderline wrong is classic. That's good. I'll have to remember that.
Okay. Well, I'm just hoping that, you know, in the future that you would think with all the resources that he has available to him that he would go to somebody that's a professional on the topic that he wants to discuss and get their opinion first and then just read it. Just read their opinion and see if they can customize it to his viewpoint so that he doesn't come across as such a boob.
You'd think, but I'm not quite sure. Jack, we appreciate talking to you.
Thanks,
please,
Jack.
Call again.
You're welcome, guys. Great talking to you. Right.
We're going to go and talk to Fran in Largo. Fran, happy Wednesday.
Oh, thank you. This is a little bit unrelated to things, and yet I think it's important. There's been a series on PBS the past few weeks, Dictator's Playbook, I think it's called. Last week, they do like profiles of dictators. Last week it was Saddam Hussein. And this week, tonight, in fact, I believe it's 10 o'clock, it's going to be Mussolini. And I just think it's worthwhile to watch that. And any comparisons you make, I mean, it's up to you, but I just think it's a very worthwhile thing to do is watch these programs.
Okay.
You are free to draw your own conclusions.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to get the word out to people, though, in case they didn't know they were on. Channel 3, PBS, I believe it's 10 o'clock tonight.
Okay, thanks, Fran.
Thanks, Fran.
Okay, we're going to try to get to as many calls we have. We have quite a few, but we're going to try to get through them. So let's do it. We're going to go talk to Kirk in St. Pete.
Kirk, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Keep up the good work. I want to bring to the attention about the furloughed employees
in
the federal government. I'm a contractor here in Florida, and one of the biggest issues we have to deal with is workmen's compensation insurance. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got people working that are not being paid, which means they're working without workmen's compensation insurance. What would happen if somebody were to get hurt or injured while they're so-called furloughed but still working? I'm having a big problem with this. That means they're breaking the law. The employer, the federal government's breaking the law by having them work not covered by workman's comp insurance.
That's a good concern.
I have heard people hearkening back to the 13th Amendment with this make people work but don't pay them. We got a little piece of our history that's kind of about that.
Right. All right, Kirk, thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
We're going to go and talk to Jeff in Oldsmar. Hello, Jeff. Happy Wednesday.
Hey, John. The other day you were talking about the massive amounts of money that our politicians have in their possession. And I was researching a band that I discovered called the Love X Nowhere, which I found is supposed to be Love Times Nowhere.
Okay.
And I went on Google to see if I could find it, because it's an obscure band. You would never hear them on the radio, but they had some excellent songs. And I ran across a blog that a music editor was interviewing them on, and eventually the conversation turned to the money side of the music business, which it usually does. And one of the members of the band said, as long as society considers the collection of wealth as our greatest goal, then the people who are best at that will become our leaders. Mm. And it just jumped off the page at me and went, wow, how prophetic. And I looked at the date of this blog and it said 2007. So this guy was totally ahead of the curve, and you see what we've ended up with in the White House, a fake billionaire with his fake presidency.
Yep. That's a powerful quote. Thank you for sharing that, Jeff.
All right.
Please call back again. Lighten us some more. That was very enlightening. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right. We're going to go a little bit northern here and talk to Shannon in Atlanta. Shannon, how are you doing?
Hey, gentlemen, thanks for allowing us the format to share our opinions, regardless of the dugout that we come out of.
All right.
Thanks so much. I really do appreciate that. I wanted to bring up to your attention one thing that I heard recently, and it was this. A mind stretched by a new idea never returns to the same shape.
There you go.
That was really unique, and I was exposed to a new idea this week, and it was from a company, an organization, not a company, but an organization called the Federation for American Immigration Reform. They brought my attention to one number, and it's $115,894,597,000. Their position, and what I've come to understand is that the physical burden of illegal aliens on U.S. taxpayers.
Did they say anything about how much those people contribute to the economy?
They did. That's the first thing that I asked. I was like, well, how much is their net worth, their contribution, before you start talking to me about, you know, what they're taking away or what they're costing? What are they bringing? Does this number offset that? And according to their research, it did. But you take, you know, certainly in Florida, orange juice is important. You take a $5 case of orange juice. Well, if you look at the labor, you know, the illegal labor that is presented, they take that $5 orange juice to about a $13 case for orange juice. You know, and if you start looking at that, certainly, everybody has their position on there, but I just thought it was interesting. You know, regardless of where you stand on the border position, there are costs that come to that. I'm probably different than a lot of listeners on the station, but there's a cost to that. And you know, regardless of where you stand, I want people to listen to some of your other folks, and they said, "Hey, I'm confused on this." And the summary is that it is confusing, and do the research. Change your ideas or support your ideas. You know,
all right. All right, Shannon. We want to appreciate you calling. That's going to wrap us up.
Thanks for bringing us Atlanta.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. That's going to wrap us here this afternoon on what always seems to be the fastest hour in radio.
That's amazing.
Of course, I want to thank all of our callers, listeners, and all those who helped this show stay up and running, especially my dear friend and mentor and the man of the hour, the birthday man himself, Mr. John Gilmore.
Thank you, sir.
And the always unsung hero of the show, Mr. Jeff Haynes. And as always, we invite you to stay tuned for another great edition of It's the Music. And you can always hear Executive Session Monday through Thursday. As for Wednesday edition of Executive Session, I'm Adam Back. Sorry, I'm rushing out here. Thank you for listening, and with any luck, we'll talk again.
Yes, sir. This has been Executive Session featuring Everyday Ethics, hosted by Adam Backs this afternoon and every Wednesday afternoon. Invite you to come back tomorrow. We're very likely to have Mr. Craig Kopp in the studio with us tomorrow as he comes in on Thursdays and to bring us yet another viewpoint on Executive Session. Stay tuned for It's the Music. We are going to take you through the afternoon and let you out on during a traffic jam. And in the meantime,
it has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
This is WMNF